You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
As always on a Monday, I speak to David Shapiro, and it's Shapiro World. But of course, David Shapiro is in the bush or wherever he is doing something. So I've got another D, and it's Darvi Root, who is the founder, director, shareholder of The Efficient Group, formerly listed on the JSE, not anymore. Darvi, just tell us the story about The Efficient Group and why you're not listed anymore, if you would.
Hello, Lindsay. Very nice talking to you.
You too.
The reality is, if you look at the South African stock market, the South African stock market hasn't been performing that well.
Yes.
And if you are a relatively small company and listed, and also a relatively illiquid stock on the stock exchange, then really it's expensive to be listed, you know.
Right.
And the reason why you go to the market is because you use your shares as money. You buy other companies with your shares, and if your shares are not that well valued, then it simply doesn't make sense to use your shares if they're not properly valued. Rather delist, get a proper valuation from somebody that's really interested in your company, and then do transactions while you are not listed. So yes, the JSE, as we all know, has been performing well, and especially if you put in a relatively small company like ours, then it's quite expensive exercise to be listed.
Okay. It was a good experience, though. And you obviously, your name was enhanced a little bit because of that listing, but now you've gone away and you've got a new partner, I would presume, but we'll talk about that another time. What I want to talk to you about now is what has happened since we last spoke, and that was maybe 7-8 months ago, Darvi. There's been lockdowns, there's been unlockdowns, there's been re-lockdowns. There has been an incredible change in market levels, whether it be the Dow Jones, S&P, NASDAQ, Hang Seng, and the JSE Securities Exchange. What have you made of it all? You're clearly, I think, from our sort of off-air chat, you're not a lockdown fan.
No, without a doubt, certainly not. Yeah, well, let's just go back. When was the first lockdown? I think in March.
March,
it started off
yes.
In March. The lockdown in March, and it's quite a hard lockdown that we had in South Africa.
Yes.
The politicians really went full out in closing down this economy. And just keep in mind that the South African economy was in deep trouble before the lockdown. We were in a recession before the time. On a per capita basis, we've been getting poorer for the past 5 years. So we were indeed in a crisis, and we were heading for a fiscal debt trap even before we've even heard of the place called Wuhan. And then it was the virus, and the politicians decided that they're going to close down the economy. And I just want to make a very important point here.
Yes, please.
It is not the pandemic or the virus or whatever that's causing all this damage. It is the lockdown. And the lockdown, of course, is in a reaction to the virus, and the idea with the lockdown is to contain the spread of the virus. But, you know, I've done some – at the beginning of the lockdown, I thought to myself, okay, so this is going to cost us some in terms of lost economic growth. It's going to increase poverty, and I do know that poverty is by far the biggest killer in the world. Poverty kills more people than all these other nasties put together.
Okay, but if you put the two together, then poverty and the lockdown increase deaths.
Differently. Well, what is very clear is that the lockdown will increase poverty quite substantially in South Africa. And what I've done, I've calculated how many lives will be lost because of the lockdown. And I can tell you how I've calculated that. But basically what it comes down to is that over the next 10 years, we will lose approximately 300,000 lives in South Africa because of the increase in poverty. Now, let me repeat myself. Poverty kills more people out there than all these other nasty things put together. Poverty kills because you don't have the infrastructure or the know-how or simply the money to buy the medicines or whatever the case might be, or because of an increase in crime or because of bad nutrition or whatever the case may be. Poverty is without a doubt the biggest killer out there, and we will see a dramatic increase. We've already seen a dramatic increase in poverty. So, and based on my calculations, and I've used what happened in Greece 10 years ago,
yes,
to do my calculations from. Compare that to an expected 20,000 lives that could be lost, that we're probably going to lose because of the virus. And of course, every life that we do lose is one life too many. But we have to understand that there's always a price to be paid. And it's not a matter of lives versus money. That certainly is not the case. It's certainly a matter of lives versus livelihoods. And what we've done, we've made it very, very difficult for South Africans actually to look after their families. with the subsequent increase in poverty and everything that goes with that. So I think the first decision by the politicians to lock down the economy, by then we didn't know that much about the virus. We didn't know how severe it's going to be. We didn't know how many people potentially can die because of the virus. We didn't know what the mortality rates and all that sort of stuff is. But very soon thereafter, it became clear that the mortality rate is significantly lower than originally thought. The people that are the potential, that can potentially succumb to this horrible thing, and it is a bad virus, don't misunderstand me, are usually the elderly, people with certain conditions and so on. And I think that we could have done that. We should have very soon after, somewhere in the end of March perhaps, we should have moved out of a lockdown into something else to get this economy to grow again. My estimates now is for the economy to contract by more than 10% for this year. The average South African's per capita GDP or income will fall by nearly 15%. This is the average South African. We're talking really serious big numbers here. We've lost 2 million jobs, more than 2 million jobs. We've lost 200,000 businesses, and the list goes on and the list goes on. I think this lockdown was far too severe, and I think it was wrong.
I think in the South African case, yes, it was, because South Africa has been essentially isolated from the rest of the world because people haven't been travelling. And the people that are spreading the coronavirus, COVID-19, have been people that have been to Taiwan, to Hong Kong, to Beijing, to Washington, to Los Angeles, to London, to Frankfurt, etc. Yeah. And they haven't been travelling to South Africa. So I think we've almost been our own little bubble, haven't we? So that's the reason we've done so well. I mean, people can say that Cyril Ramaphosa's administration has done really well, but I think it's just been accidental, personally. Well done to that administration, but it has been an accident. The reason is that because we haven't had people coming in and giving us the virus. Do you think that a lockdown in South Africa increases or decreases poverty and unemployment?
Well, without a doubt, it will increase poverty and unemployment quite dramatically. Your comment about we not traveling that much and people not coming to South Africa that much, but I think there's another factor why South Africa, while the infection rate and the death rate in South Africa is also much lower than many other places in the world, is simply because of South Africa having quite a youthful population. On average, we're much younger.
Very true. Yes.
Than many of the other countries in the world. And the better approach would have been certainly to isolate perhaps the elderly and people with people with certain conditions and so on. That, I think, would have been the responsible thing to do. But to lock down the economy completely and totally, it's completely and totally wrong. And the rules that were implemented and applied, I mean, they even prescribed to you on whether you can smoke or drink, and all the smokers and all the drinkers just kept on drinking and smoking.
Of course.
So all that happened is that the politicians simply extended their powers, and the politicians, I can promise you, and already there are signs that politicians do not want to relinquish their powers, the power grab that they've gone through the last couple of months. I think we handled the whole thing totally incorrect, and we're going to pay a price for this for many years.
I think that, Darvey, what's happened is that we didn't know how to do it. We took our lead from other people overseas. We were scared about something that was, as I said, an unknown. And therefore we've learnt, but I think South Africa has learnt more than other countries, and I think the whole African continent has as well. So well done to South Africa. Very, very low cases, and hopefully when it comes to winter in April, May, June next year, it won't sort of resuscitate itself. And hopefully it's a good long summer with very few cases. Apart from that, what about the markets? What do you make of all this thing? Obviously, we're talking about the United States of America, the world's largest economy. Well, obviously, we're going to talk about the trade deal that's been done in the Southeast Asian countries region this morning. But the US election, you must have looked at that as a well-developed economy and a well-developed democracy in South Africa and thought, goodness me, what a pathetic state of affairs that the United States of America is.
Haven't you thought? Think so?
Oh, yeah. What are you talking about? Of course. What?
No. I don't think so. I don't necessarily think so. It's
Why?
A vibrant democracy. No, they're making use of the courts. They fight amongst, but they don't kill one another. Eventually, the thing will be settled somehow. This is a vibrant, very mature democracy. And
I have to stop you. You just said mature. There is nothing mature about the way that Donald Trump has not allowed.
I'm not talking about the leaders. I'm not talking about the leaders. I'm talking about the whole process.
Well, the process is
a mature process.
The process is led by the leaders, and the leader has said, "I don't believe that I lost the election." In fact, he says, "I won the election." So you can't say that's mature because it's immature. It's the definition of immaturity.
What I can't understand is that the Americans, there are more than 300 million of them, and they can come up with Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
Yes, I know, but that's...
I don't think it's a disaster. I think it's a sign of a democracy that works with a very long history. I agree with you with the quality of the leadership, but that is completely different. I think people will eventually fall in, and they will eventually, whatever the courts decide, and there are going to be a lot of court cases, which is a good thing. Because that's better than settling in a court than to settle it by a gun, for example, if you have a disagreement on something. No, I think the Americans is actually a very good example of how democracy should be conducted. Not the leadership. Wow. That is something completely different.
Okay, Darby, I've got to take all that in that you've just said. But anyway, do you agree with the fact that Joe Biden is the president-elect, the 46th president-elect? Of the United States of America. Do you believe that he was elected fairly? And at the current vote, I think it's something like 5.6 million more people voted for him than they did for the other bloke. So therefore, he's the president. Do you agree with that? And do you like it?
Well, I think for South Africa, I must tell you, I didn't like either of them. Mm-hmm. But for South Africa, I think it's probably better if Biden wins, and becomes the next president. And there are a number of reasons why I say so. One is that Biden's got a bit of a history in support of the ANC, which is a good thing, and that is our government, whether you like them or not.
Yes.
Another good thing is that he will probably turn a bit of a blind eye to stupid things that our government do, and they do quite a lot of these sort of stupid things. And so probably we will get the protection and the benefits of AGOA for some time longer. Well, Donald Trump, he could have been a little bit harsher. He could have said, listen, you guys don't want to support me in the United Nations. I'm going to kick you out. You're not going to get the benefits of all our legislations and support packages anymore. So, but in the longer term, perhaps Donald Trump would have been better because he simply wouldn't have tolerated some of the stupidities that our government are certainly guilty of. But I think in the short term, at least, Biden is certainly good for us. And also, Biden, so far, the financial markets globally seem to be quite happy with that. Of course, the announcement on the vaccines came just after the election, which is a bit of a coincidence. But that certainly helped a lot as well. But this party is not going to come to an end sometime or the other. And it is going to come to an end because we've pretty much reached the end of the line as far as monetary policy is concerned internationally, and getting closer and closer to wherever the end of the line for fiscal policy is going to be as well. But for now, I'm quite happy. I think the world economy is in quite a sweet spot at the moment. It's not going to last, I promise you that.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. But anyway, just going back to Trump, in the 4 years that he was in power, and he's got another 65 days, I think it is, he didn't visit the African continent once. He sent his wife, who went to Ghana and did some fine work and walked around and promoted some causes and that sort of thing. But he didn't go and see South Africa. He didn't go and see Nigeria. He didn't go and see the leaders of Egypt, even though these are large economies with which the United States has strong associations when it comes to trade, but he didn't do it once. In fact, he called us by a disparaging term, and I won't say what it is, but he called us S-hole countries. Did he not?
Yeah. Yes, he did. He did give us some names, the African continent and some countries in Africa. But the interesting thing is there were some pro Trump protests in Nigeria.
Yes.
A lot of people were marching in favor of Donald Trump, saying they want him to be president of the United States.
Because he likes oil, that's why. Because he's an oil man.
But not only that. I've spoken to some Malawians. I've spoken to some Mozambicans and even Zimbabweans. And I'm talking about the normal people on the street. I'm not talking about political leaders or somebody like that, or economists or journalists for that matter. But the normal men on the street, they are Africans, are pretty much in favor of Donald Trump. I was really very, very surprised to see how much support there is for Donald Trump on ground floor or ground level.
Let's move on to markets and to the economy. You just said something. You said it's not going to last. What did you mean? What is not going to last? Tell me, because you clearly seem a little bit nervous about what we've seen in the last since end of March, when the market has gone to a V-shaped recovery, certainly in the United States of America. The JSE has done well as well, hanging on the coattails of the international markets, rather, and economies, recovering quite nicely. Are you skeptical of this recovery?
Yeah, you have to make a distinction between financial markets and the economy. The economy is probably going to take some time. Financial markets are recovering because of the stimulus with central banks and the fiscal authorities. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason for that. So I think there's a bit of a balance there. Economies, of course, will start reacting positive to all these stimulus as well. But you can reduce interest rates to zero and maybe a little bit below zero, but not much more than that. In the meantime, all these massive fiscal projects that have been launched by major countries in the world, that must come to an end sometime or the other as well. And I have a suspicion, and I think we spoke about this about 10 years ago, and I was wrong 10 years ago, let me admit that, where I said that I think inflation is going to become a problem worldwide. It did not become a problem. But I think this time around, let me say this, it could be different. And I'm a little bit concerned about inflation going forward. More importantly is what I think is going to happen to South Africa, because I think I'm better in touch with the South African economy. And there, I think in a year, 18 months' time, inflation will become a problem in South Africa. And there are a number of reasons why I say so. So, but anyway, in the meantime, globally, everybody is still on a sugar high or a cheap credit high or a fiscal stimulus high. And this can't go on forever. The day of reckoning must come sometime or the other. But looking at the debt levels of the Japanese, for example, it's perhaps quite some time off in terms of the debt levels of how much the various governments can still borrow. Locally, of course, that's a completely different story.
All right. So interest rates are going to go up in South Africa over the next year or so because of inflation going up. And why is that? Despite, I mean, the rand has gone from the 1930s against the US dollar to the 1530s against the US dollar. So that's 400 basis points. So where does this inflation story come from, Darvi? Because we've got a strong rand and we've got no local demand. So why would inflation go up?
Strong rand. There's no strong rand currency, okay, Lindsay.
Did you call me currency?
I just called you currency, Lindsay.
Yes.
Now, the rand, you picked the weakest level of the rand, and the rand was trading at 19 something.
1934. I remember it on March the 23rd.
Before that, the rand was, of course, a little bit stronger, weakening to where it is currently. But anyway, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is the South African currency is a weak currency. Yeah. It is a very, very volatile currency for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that we have very, very liquid financial markets, and that also contributes to the currency being quite volatile. It's easier for a foreigner to come in, take a bite out of our very, very juicy yields and run out again. So I think the currency is going to be quite volatile over time. Also keep in mind that although we're running a surplus now on our trade accounts, we are losing money. We're losing a lot of money. So people are taking money out of South Africa. And in the meantime, our savings are just – we're currently saving between 15 and 20% of GDP. The fiscal deficit is going to take all of that up. So that means that we are very dependent on foreign capital inflows. And with you actually losing money on your capital accounts, that's probably pointing to a currency that is going to be at least be very volatile or maybe even significantly weaker than it is currently. So that's one reason, the currency. But there are some other reasons as well. One technical reason is simply that we have inflation quite low in South Africa now, and that is just a base reason, statistical noise. So I think purely from a statistical point of view, we're probably going to see inflation going up a little bit over time. And then some other potential shocks that can happen, things like, for example, oil price going back to more, what's realistic, $50, $60 or so?
No, that's unrealistic.
Of course, that can also impact on, well, let's just keep that in mind. If we want higher commodity prices, because that is good for South Africa,
yes.
But higher commodity prices also means that the oil price is going to go up, our most important import product. So, but the single most important reason why I believe we're going to see inflation is because I think there's going to be the pressure on the Reserve Bank is simply going to, the politicians simply going to pile more and more pressure on the Reserve Bank to wait for rate increases. And the Reserve Bank, I think, is going to fall behind the curve. waiting too long before they start increasing interest rates. And the moment you get the spiral going, a credit spiral, which of course leads to an inflationary spiral, then you really have to take big steps to contain inflation. And I don't think the politicians will allow the Reserve Bank to do that. And not for the normal reasons, but because of the very high levels of state debt. State debt in the current financial year will go up to about 84% of GDP. Those are my estimates. And remember, inflation erodes the value of money, but inflation also erodes the value of debt. You know, if you look at countries like, for example, Zimbabwe and Venezuela, and there are many other similar examples in the world, is that usually there's a combination of two things. The one is state debt getting out of hand, which is quite often and usually followed by very high levels of inflation. And that's what I think. That I think, is the most important reason why we are probably going to see some inflationary issues in South Africa pretty soon, I would say 18 months or so. We're going to see inflation accelerating quite a lot.
Okay, we'll see. I've been hearing that story for a long, long time, mainly actually from overseas markets, but that seems to be contained, depending on where you are, to between 2 to 3%, something like that. South Africa, yeah, maybe it can go back to 4.5%, 5%. I don't know. Darvi, if you put on your asset management hat now, where do you put people's money? Let's say that I win the lottery and I come with you with 10 million rand and I say, Darvi, please make some money for me for the next 2 to 3 years. What do you do? Because you're clearly nervous.
I take the money out. I take the money out of South Africa. That's what I've been doing.
Yes.
And that was the right decision. So basically what we do, we put it in three, let's call it silos. We take the bulk of the money out, put it usually in a managed share portfolio internationally. That's our business.
Right.
And then that's the first silo. The second one is to put it in a local domestic share portfolio, but a little bit less. And then the third silo is to put some money in cash, so in a money market or an income fund or something like that. So you live off your income fund or your money market until the money runs out, and then you take some money out of your local share portfolio until that runs out, and eventually take money from abroad. So that's basically the basic structure on which we put the way that we manage money for our clients.
Okay, so but most of your money, as much as you can, get out of South Africa.
Not only that, of course, if you look at an asset management point of view, but if you're a business person in South Africa, there are wonderful opportunities in South Africa. Keep your business, make your money in South Africa, but take it out. So that's my advice, and that's why we've been doing that.
Darvi Root, thanks so much for your time. That's Darvi Root, the Chief Economist, Founder and Director of The Efficient Group. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.